broadcasting from the ESPN Radio studios in Tallahassee, Florida, and in partnership with the JoeBucksFan.com podcasting network, you're locked in with the Scuttlebucks, Jeff Cameron, and Tom Lang. Tampa Bay Buccaneer Talk starts now. Here's ESPN Tallahassee's Jeff Cameron.
Hello, Scuttlebucks. I hope you're well, and I mean that More than I usually do. I always want you to be well. But especially after what the state's been through, and those of you down there in the Tampa-St. Pete area, plenty of friends and family still reside. I know that in some areas in particular, struggling a little bit with power and really the kind of mess made by Irma. But it does appear that by and large, most of us, and I hope this finds you doing well, as I say, kind of got a little lucky with this one, and we're not going to spend a lot of time on the storm. Lord knows you've already had to hear all about the storm ad nauseum and dealt with it just as we did and our families have. But I would like to tell you, storm aside, that we could talk about football. And, you know, I guess today, Tom, we can, because the Bucs are going to play the Bears. They did make the announcement. It is official. That game will be at Raymond James this Sunday at 1 o'clock.
They made the announcement, but are we sure?
Well,
is it going to be all right?
I mean, we're going to
play a football game.
We're going to play the game. You know, Tom and I cover Florida State here in Tallahassee and other college football games, and there haven't been any.
I see a lot of football on the television, Jeff.
They tell me football is being played all around this great country of ours. We're just not covering any of those because the teams we cover, they are not playing football.
I see football on the television on Saturdays and Sundays, but the helmets and the jerseys and the colors of
those
two things.
They're not Tampa Bay's.
They don't look like jerseys and helmets that I know and love.
No, it's frustrating, but we are going to have football Sunday. It is against a Bears team that played very well against Minnesota. Excuse me, against Minnesota. Listen to me. I had Minnesota on the mind because of Dalvin Cook's performance. Played very, very well against Atlanta and had opportunities, obviously, there at the end of the game to win it. Four cracks inside the 10-yard line will hurt your feelings when you don't put it in the end zone. And as a Bucs podcast, obviously, we would have liked to have seen Atlanta fall there and start the season 0-1 with a mile upset, a pretty big upset, in fact, but it doesn't happen. So, nonetheless, the Bucs are playing a Bears defense that played very, very well.
Yeah, defense that played well. I think there were some week one jitters, too, for the Falcons. You know, we all do play fantasy football on the side, and I'm watching with great interest to see how Julio Jones performs. And I had Sanu in a pinch because every one of my Bucs and Dolphins players had to sit the pine for week one. It looked like a bit of a disjointed mess for the Falcons in week one. Vegas probably knew something and everybody else didn't because the number was six, I believe. Six
Vegas
or six
knew
and
it's
a half.
An NFL football game, and there's no such thing as knowing what the hell is going to happen in any one NFL football game. Crazy.
And then, frankly, you know, Chicago did enough to win that game. It just didn't happen. They didn't make the plays down the stretch with goal to go. And, you know, that throw to Jordan Howard is just a little bit late. I know everybody's focusing. Howard's got to catch the ball. But
He's not getting in anyhow, by the way.
Exactly. He's tackled at the one-yard line, and the clock is ticking out. They don't have any timeouts, and the game's over. If the throw is on time, it's a walk-in touchdown. It's a moonwalk, walk-off touchdown the moment that they get the extra point. But I thought, you know, for Chicago, that's a team that at least has my attention now. You know, if you just said in the flow of the season, you know, Tampa Bay opens up week one with the Dolphins, plays that game, then comes back home for a home opener against Chicago, I would think, all right, not a big deal here. You should come away with a victory. It doesn't have to be pretty. But as the old adage goes, you know, the highest level of improvement for every team is between week one and week two of their season. And Chicago has played that first game. So they're getting to the second game, and they've gotten some things worked out. They've discovered somebody like number 29, Tariq Cohen.
Yeah, I don't think that the adage will hold true for the Bears. That's as well as they're going to play all year. The game we just saw from the Bears is about the best game they could possibly play, and that's probably one of the worst games the Falcons could play. I think the Bears will be lucky to win five games this year. Tampa Bay needs to take care of business here. And I understand what you're saying, and it makes perfect sense because game action is game action, and you cannot simulate that. And so right off the bat, just live speed of the game, adrenaline, emotion, that'll be – something that Tampa Bay is getting accustomed to, and the Bears have just done it. I got you. That should be a rather quick adjustment because the bottom line is this. Jordan Howard and Tariq Cohen are the only two good players on the Bears. We're done here. I mean, on offense, anyhow. They've got nothing else. Their receivers are garbage. If this secondary can't stop those receivers, there is no beating decent teams who throw the football. It's Mike Glennon and a bunch of crap on the edges.
Yeah, I agree with you there. It's just a matter of getting the pass rush and getting the pass rush home. It is a two-headed monster. They can line up Cohen in the slot. They have like 87 tight ends, which is very throwback, Chicago Bears-esque. But to me, again, just consider that the starters didn't play in week 4 of the preseason, as most starters do not.
You're right. Rust is a factor.
And they're not practicing until today. So, no, I mean, rust good is a factor. Lord.
I grant you that that could be a problem and would probably be the biggest problem because it's not personnel. I mean, that I watched every second of that Bears game.
Yeah.
And I was just stunned that, well, how lacking an NFL team could be at wide receiver. I know Alshon Jeffrey left, and that's going to be a problem for them. Because, frankly, between White and Wright and Sims, they don't have anything that really scares a secondary.
Well, White's hurt anyway. Yeah, because right. He hears collarbone. Yeah, that's the thing, too. It, you know, it isn't a Chicago Bears podcast, but you know, Glennon's not really in a position to succeed out there, given the weapons that they do have. You know, Jordan Howard can catch the ball out of the backfield. He obviously didn't in that key play down the stretch, but he only had 200-300 yards of receiving damage. Last year, most of the damage he did was on the ground. So there's just, it's really underwhelming, that Chicago offense. I agree. From a, you know, if you just look at a two-deep standpoint, Tampa should be fine. It's a game in Tampa Bay.
Win the game.
That's going to be a healing-type moment for the city, for the crowd. They're going to be raucous. They wanted to see this team with all the weapons for about 7 months now.
I can't imagine what Tampa Bay is dealing with right now in their want to see something on a football field. I mean, it's escapism in its truest form, week to week, when there aren't hurricanes to deal with. After hurricanes, it's truly escapism. It's a moment. It's 3 to 4 hours to be able to take your mind off of some of the frustration and stress that you're dealing with, and in some cases, profound sadness. And obviously, Bucs players, you know, Bucs management, coaches, they're desperate to get out there, but the fans have really been salivating for this game because it's a good team. And that's another thing, Tom, watching these games. I've watched, I know you do the same as I do with our little NFL subscription there. Which
yeah, we
is,
get game day, yeah.
All right, so one of the things you note, even if you're just watching the shortened version, which is the best way to do it because you can catch every game in about 30 minutes, One thing you do is you're trying the best you can, without having seen the Bucs play, you're trying the best you can to kind of assess what Tampa Bay will be compared to these teams you're watching this past Sunday and Monday and Thursday. And, you know, it can be very difficult from week to week. For example, New England looked awful on defense, and I have a suspicion they won't be awful on defense this year. Maybe a trouble spot, but they won't be that, right? And Kansas City looked great. And you can look around. I mean, Jacksonville's got a good defense. It ain't double-digit sacks good. Houston's got issues. They got to work out. So you're trying to assess while also note that it's week one and then compare and contrast what we think the Bucs are going to be. And I just think that, in general, the Buccaneers look like, from what I've seen of the other teams in week one, and it's just 1 week, like one of those teams that are just outside the top 10 and will have to win some key games to be a playoff team. And this would be one of those, because you got to beat the people you're supposed to beat, especially when you're playing at home.
Yeah, I think it's a key game out of the gate again, because one team is playing their second NFL regular season game, and the other one is playing their first. So you got to shake off the rust. Don't let this thing get to the late third, early fourth quarter and have it be a field goal game. You know, you got to do what you're supposed to do. And you see when offenses have weapons and don't. It's a big talking point today, because I know a lot of national shows are really firing back up today, full-fledged coverage of the NFL, previewing week two and consuming all that was week one. But it's amazing how much different Alex Smith looks when there are a couple more weapons in the offense. It's amazing how Sam Bradford all of a sudden appears to be the quarterback that was drafted number one overall. Everybody's overreacting because, A, they forget the Saints can't defend on the back end. And then, number two, he has weapons. He actually has a Stephon Diggs who's caught up to the NFL speed of the game. He's always been a freak athlete since his days at Maryland. And Dalvin Cook allowed for open receivers down the field because New Orleans' primary objective was clearly to stop the run. So all of a sudden, other things open up. It's just amazing what happens when quarterbacks get weapons. And the reason I say that, Tampa Bay has weapons. The Bucs are one of those teams that should not have a Mike Evans double teamed on every single play, or somebody who has a star running back stacked up in the box against every single play. They have options to go to everywhere on the field, and those offenses look and feel different each drive they take the field.
So let's do this, though, real quick in this opening segment while we're talking about, obviously, the Bucs finally taking the field, playing a football game, and one of consequence because they need to beat the Bears. You need to beat the teams you're supposed to beat, especially at home, as I just said. But that said, you know, obviously we've got a chance to watch the entirety of a division. And while I think the Falcons will obviously be a far cry better than they showed on Sunday against the Bears, you already knew that. So that was sort of a foregone conclusion. Nothing really to learn about the Falcons game other than they looked pretty rusty. But Cam Newton looked terrible for Carolina. And if you watched any of that game, the score is deceiving. He played one of the worst games of any quarterback in the National Football League this past weekend. And if you don't believe me, go watch the tape. He misses three touchdowns, wide open receivers, the kind of receivers that are streaking open that college, you know, middling college programs quarterbacks hit. He missed them by a mile. So accuracy issues off of an injury have got to be terribly disconcerting for the Carolina Panthers. That was the note that I came away with from watching that game. Cam looked awful. Could be that, again, he's had precious few reps, dealing with an injury, all that stuff. He'll obviously get better, and they won the game. But he was terrible. And the Saints are going to be a bad football team. The Saints are going to be a bad football team. There's already infighting, which is great to watch. And, you know, I don't know that that's a team that can do much better than 5-11.
It never made sense, though, the Peterson acquisition.
It doesn't.
You know, Mark Ingram had just emerged as somebody who fits within the constructs of the offense. They brought in another back that, you know, Drew Brees likes because he's Darren Sproles-esque and they want to throw him the ball. But then, obviously, they lose one of their starting offensive linemen in game one. The back end of the defense can't defend.
No.
They can't really get to the passer all that well. I mean,
there's not a lot to like about the Saints,
and
my
then,
man.
You're right about Carolina. I watched closely the first half of that game.
He was terrible.
Oh, my God.
He's got Olsen for a touchdown. Yes. He never sees him.
Yes.
Another time he misses Olsen over the middle for a 35-yard gain. I think he threw that 20 yards over his head.
Yep.
He's got a walk-in touchdown on a blown coverage that he overthrows out of the back of the end zone.
Yeah, moving right to left.
It's unbelievable how bad he was. And I don't know that people will talk about it because, obviously, they won the game going away. They should have scored 35, 40 points if he could throw the football accurately. That was amazing.
It should have been the Derek Anderson show for the entire second half of that game. And, you know, it's a good thing that Thomas Davis seems to get younger every single year because that linebacker level looks as good as it's looked when they were making, you know, plays all the way going to a Super Bowl a couple of years ago. But, yeah, if I'm a Carolina fan, I take the win and I am kind of cross-eyed.
I get a little nervous because last year was a bad year. And then you come into this year and you think, okay, well, all right. We have years like this. So, you know, Kuechly got hurt, all these different injuries. Kelvin Benjamin went down. You know, we'll just try to get on with the getting.
Yeah.
No, man. I've been saying this. It's been kind of my pulpit here for a little while now. Cam's MVP season.
Could be the outlier. Yes.
Yeah.
Well, okay. If you're an apologist and the eternal optimist up in Charlotte, you're saying, well, he didn't play in the preseason, so here was his preseason.
Fair enough.
Yeah.
I'll grant you that. Yeah. I will absolutely grant you that. I'll say you might be right. It could very well be that he just needed to get that under his belt, and he'll be all right. But I would also be looking at that situation with a jaundiced eye. So what am I really saying? It's the Scuttlebucks, right? Buccaneers football. It's us in Atlanta. Let's get to the getting. It's us in Atlanta. Take care of business. Start 1-0. Let's begin the process. It's a lot of fun to watch. I hate that they're going to have to play 16 straight games because somewhere in there, that's going to come back to haunt you.
No, we talked about it last week. I thought, you know, 11 wins was probably a good number for this squad. I really love everything they do on offense. And I love that Mike Smith, even if the defense can be a sieve for stretches of a season, and I think it will be again this year because of a lack of being able to get to the passer with any consistency, he can limit damage. He can scheme it up to limit damage and give his team a chance to win.
Sure.
And with this offense being the way that it is, as long as they produce in the red zone, they come away with touchdowns. They score every time in the red zone, but they come away with more touchdowns than field goals. man, all that defense has to do is hold you to about 21 points a game, and we got a chance to win double digits. But 16 in a row brings it back down to about 10 wins for me because it's going to cost you a game.
You know what our audience here with the Scuttlebucks don't know about us is that on my show, I like to do a little W's and L's with my partner here, Tom Lang, and we have some fun with W's and L's. We even have a little sounder for that ass. And we're going to do that here momentarily on the Scuttlebucks. It's a bizarre thing to do for the NFL. It's a little easier to do in college where you have like 9 automatic wins based on if you're a power team against you know, the Middle Sisters of the Poor. Doesn't exist in the NFL because anybody can lose to anybody, as we've all seen many times before. But let's have a fun – we'll do W's and L's. But let's not do W's and L's for the entire season. Why don't we take it through the New England game? We'll take it through the New England game, which is October the 5th. So I'm going to take you through the next 4 games, a quarter of the season, okay? And we're going to do a little W's and L's projections for you when we come back on the Scuttlebucks. Before we go to break, I need to remind you that the Scuttlebucks is presented by our friends at Fan Retreat. Go to fanretreat.com. It's a great Florida company, fanretreat.com. Use your Joe Bucks Fan discount code. One-stop shop where you can purchase event tickets and travel. That's fanretreat.com.
Fire the cannons. Plant the daggers.
There's the dagger! There's the dagger!
The Scuttlebucks are back on JoeBucksFan.com. Here's Jeff Cameron and Tom Lang.
That's the good music right there, not just because it's Van Halen, but because it means Lee DeKemper, JoeBucksFan.com, the website. You know that because you go there and you read the stuff and you click on the podcast and you celebrate all the goodness. That is JoeBucksFan.com. Hello, Lee DeKemper. How the hell are you, buddy?
Jeff, I'm okay, and I understand that you're okay. We survived the storm, and it's time for football.
It is time for football, and I'm glad to hear it. You're okay, and luckily, friends and family have all reported similar conditions, saying that they're all right. They're hot and bothered and without power, but they're hanging in. By the way, real quick, on that note, anything interesting from the Bucs players themselves on avoiding Hurricane Irma and any harrowing stories to reveal?
Well, I didn't really hear any harrowing stories.
Good.
DeMar Dotson got stuck in a 25-hour traffic jam trying to get to Louisiana. But, yeah, and he told me, he's like, and I said something, you're fortunate you didn't run out of gas. He goes, I had extra with me. So
yeah, that's harrowing, by the way, Lee. That I would call that harrowing because if I was stuck in traffic for 25 hours, I'd begin to punch my own testicles repeatedly. I'm just letting you know that.
The windshield. Yeah, I'd go mental. But aside from that, I thought the best story was, because I can relate, because I was kind of debating, should I bug out, shouldn't I bug out? And for 5 days, it was East Coast, East Coast, East Coast. All of a sudden, you know, on Friday, it's like, here it comes up the West Coast. Like, so I started checking planes, and Tampa International had announced they were closing down at 6 p.m. Saturday. So I started checking flights. I'm like, well, I don't know if I want to tangle with a Cat 4, and which is what was predicted at the time. And I checked planes, and I'm like, unless I want to drop $800, I was trapped. I'm like, well, I'm not spending $800. I'll just hunker down. Well, apparently Chris Conte was in the same situation. And his girlfriend, a former Bucks cheerleader, is 8 months pregnant with his child. And he's like, oh, crap, I better get out of here. And so he just found the first flight he could get, which was Pittsburgh, and he didn't care where. He was telling me, he goes, I just wanted to get out. I didn't care where. I don't care if it was Dallas, Minnesota, anywhere. And he found a flight out, and it just happened to be Pittsburgh. So him and his girlfriend and his soon-to-be child bugged out to the Steel City just to get the hell out of town. He didn't care where, just as long as he got out of Florida.
A little bit easier for Chris Conte and any other player to do when you have the kind of
resources.
Yeah, you got the resources available to you where that $800, you won't miss it. You and I,
well, the cool
we missed that.
Yeah, you and I, that's right, yeah. the really cool thing, and this is just from a team perspective, the Glazer family rallied to their cause and got hold. But there's several players, as you can imagine, they've got money to spend, which, you know, resources. And they have waterfront property. Well, they had to evacuate. They didn't have any choice. You know, they were in Zone A. So the Glazer family scrambled and got 4 different airplanes to get these guys and anyone else out of town, including any employees, any family members that wanted to get out, and they flew them up to Charlotte. Now, even though they flew a lot of players up to Charlotte, because it was a bye week, they, you know, it was not kosher to get together for practices or anything team-related. That's against NFLPA rules. So the Glazer family just got these guys out of town, and they, you know, let them do whatever they wanted to do. That was their free time. But they got everybody together to say, if you want to get out, we'll find a way to get you out. And they scrambled and found four planes on Saturday to evacuate any players, any family members, any employees. They wanted to get out. It was on the Glazers' dime.
Good for the Buccaneers. Good for the Glazers. Right thing to do. Glad to hear it. Now to the football itself. It seems like it's been forever and a day. But they will play football. They'll play on Sunday. It was announced. 1 o'clock. The Bears will be in town. They gave the Atlanta Falcons a scare. I just got done telling Tom that the only fear I really have of the Bears is the Buccaneers' rust. Talk to us about rust and the fear of rust, because when you look at the Bears, by the way, they're basically a two-man team. It's their backfield. They've got no receivers. They play a decent brand of defense. But the Bucs should win this game. They're at home. They're the better football team, the better personnel, et cetera. But it's something. There is something to be said for not having played a game for an extended period of time and the Bears making adjustments fresh off of an NFL game, which you can learn a lot from in 1 week. The Bucs haven't had that opportunity. So let's talk rust factor.
Well, I think that's a valid point. And Sunday, I was watching Steelers-Browns game. And in a post-game, Phil Simms, who used to do, he was game analyst. He was number one guy with CBS. Now he's in studio. And him and Bill Cowher were talking. And Phil Simms told Cowher, Simms was essentially ripping Mike Tomlin. He said, hey, the Steelers struggled in the first half because Tomlin wouldn't play the first team offense very much, if at all, in the preseason. And Phil Simms, I'm going to directly quote him, he said, you can't tell me that wasn't a factor. Well, when the Bucs take the field Saturday, the offense will take a snap in a game situation for the first time in 22 days. So if you take what Phil Simms says, and I know a lot of people knock Phil Simms, but hey, the guy was on a winning team. He was a quarterback. He should know something. I think there's some merit to that. And now I asked a bunch of players today about that, and most of them poo-pooed it, but you can't tell me that's not going to be a factor. So yes, the Bucs have better personnel on paper, but they haven't taken, you know, Dirk Koetter, he basically treated the preseason borderline like a joke. And I personally think preseason is a joke. I think it's a waste of money. But after they lost to the Browns the third week of the season, Koetter was joking after the game. He's like, yeah, I hope I get home in time to watch the fight, you know? And it was like he was flipping about it. And then the last game, which is a complete joke, the fourth preseason game, he sat out 36 guys. And that tells you what he thinks of the preseason. So we're going to find out in a few days if Koetter went overboard in resting these guys or not. We're going to find out. Now, obviously, no one predicted that they were going to get the extra bye week to start the season. No one expected that. So maybe had Koetter known that, it might have been different. But we shall see. But I think that's a significant factor. So I'm hoping that the Bucs don't get surprised by anything in the first half.
Well, the problem, and this is the weird thing. I will say I thought Dirk Koetter handled preseason well. You're right. He could not have predicted this extra week, which probably would have altered his plans. But there are some things you can't do, in practice that you do in a game. And one of those things, without question, is you cannot liken the adrenaline and the speed of a game when it's a real game as opposed to a scrimmage, a practice, or a preseason game. It is very tough to find the corresponding level of energy, speed, adrenaline, and anybody who's played any game, really, you wouldn't even have to be an NFL expert. You just have to be somebody who's played organized sports before. You know, if you take a long time off and you're playing a guy who hasn't, who's just been playing day after day after day or week after week anyhow, you're going to have to shake the cobwebs off. So I would imagine some of this, Lee, will be unavoidable. They might look, in some areas on the football field, a little rusty for a quarter. Luckily, the Bears suck. So if while you're struggling, it's only 3-0 or 7-0, and you kind of right the ship and get acclimated, you should be all right.
Exactly. Very similar to what, you know, I said I watched the Steelers Sunday. Very similar to that. Clearly, the Steelers are a better team than the Browns. Browns are garbage, and that's what happened there. The Browns hung with them for a half. The Steelers got their sea legs, so to speak, and boom, second half they pulled away. That's what I'm hoping happens here if worst comes to worst. That's what I hope happens here come Sunday. Now, Mike Smith was talking today, Bucs defensive coordinator, and he was asked about Mike Glennon. I got the hunch that he was just saying this about Mike Glennon. He said, you know, obviously the first-team defense of the Bucs last year went against Glennon quite a bit in practice. And he said, Mike Smith speaking, there were times that came up to practice. He was like, oh my gosh, we're going to get lit up during the game, which, by the way, they did a few times. But I think Mike was just saying that to make Mike Glennon look good, not to offer any locker room you know, motivation, so to speak, you know, newspaper clippings up on the locker room doors, that kind of stuff. I'm not a big Mike. I'm a big Mike Glennon person as far as him as a person. I'm not a big Mike Glennon person as far as a quarterback. There's a reason why the Bears drafted a quarterback in the first round, the third overall pick. There's a reason why the Bucs let Glennon go. Glennon, and there's a reason why Glennon got benched for Josh McCown. So I'm not Glennon as a quarterback, and he's, like you said, he's got no targets. Kevin White was the only legitimate target he had that's hurt now. So you know, this, if the Bears somehow upset the Bucs have trouble. Now, go back a little bit about Russ. I got to be honest with you. The Bucs' first-team offense, outside of a little bit against Jacksonville, didn't look that sharp in preseason. Didn't look that sharp.
You know, I think, though, I really do think that what you saw in the first quarter of the games in which they left the starters out there all the way through the half, I thought the first two drives of every preseason game with Jameis, they looked pretty sharp. They didn't always cash it in the red zone. We remember that.
That's what I mean, yeah.
Yeah, they well, and remember
they
some
marched
of that
down the field, but they didn't cash in. Perfect,
right.
That's a perfect analogy.
Yeah, but I liked the consistency with which he was throwing the ball. I liked the consistency in which the offensive line protected him. They ran the football mm-hmm. adequately. I think that they will cash that in. I think a couple of those were just circumstances where it didn't go right down in the red zone. We'll see if that carries over to be a problem all year long. But I suspect they're going to be all right. This will be a fun game. At least this time next week when I talk to you, Lee, we'll be analyzing the Bucs either in defeat or in victory. Let's hope it's victory, obviously, but it'll be good to be talking about football that's played on the field instead of in theory. My friend, I always appreciate it. Talk to you later.
You're all same here, Jeff. Thanks a lot. Real football, finally.
Yeah, beautiful thing. Take care, Lee. That's Lee DeKemper, JoeBucksFan.com. He joins us every week on the Scuttlebucks and get his perspective when he has an opportunity, obviously, to go down there and interview players and talk to coaches and kind of get a vibe, get a feel. At this point, I mean, there'd be no sense in fibbing to you guys. I mean, everybody's just ready for football. A lot of it's speculation. Some of it is obviously informed speculation and, you know, conjecture to some extent. But you can do that when you haven't played a game. It'll be nice to analyze football, the X's and O's. It's got to happen.
Yeah, the 22 days thing, it feels real. That feels like absolutely. Sometimes you hear a number and you say, it can't be that long.
Right, right.
It can't be that movie came out 5 years ago. I just saw it in the theaters last week. It feels very much like it's been 22 days since the Buccaneers starters played football.
You know, on that point, Tom, I think, what did I see yesterday or the day before yesterday? Yes, it was that. I saw that Saving Private Ryan's about to turn 18.
Yeah, yeah.
Sweet Jesus, man. Yeah. When you start talking about a movie that is nearly 20 years old that feels like, I don't know, 10 at the most?
Man, the one that hurt my feelings was last year Happy Gilmore turned 20. I mean, think about that.
Now, that seems more likely than Saving Private Ryan nearly being 20 to me. But it's all your own, you know, it's your life experiences, right? Whatever you were doing at that time,
sure.
What age you were, right?
Well, apparently, yeah. I was 10 years old when Happy Gilmore came out. You know, yeah, it feels like it came out yesterday.
Now, when you put it in that way, it's very weird because you're now in your 30s and, wow, that's...
Yeah.
Yeah,
it was probably a little racy for me at the time, but I enjoyed the hell out of it.
Hey, so we got to do W's and L's, but before we get to that, I want to do this real quick. It lets me know, if you're just talking about mindset, right, that the Buccaneers have put together a product that we're invested in. The Bucs have put together more than just, okay, a collection of uniforms that represent your city and they're your team colors, and, you know, so by virtue of that, you root for them. I think we're invested in them emotionally. I think we're invested in them intellectually. We're invested in the process that we've seen take hold since they drafted Jameis, and since you could establish that you have a franchise quarterback and it was time to put weapons around him, and now we needed, and they brought over Mike Smith. That really was a huge upgrade, defensive side of the ball, made the changes with the head coach, the whole thing. Because the NFL, for me, as somebody who's covered college football for 20 years and really kind of finds himself leaning towards the college game, If in a pinch, if you say you got to watch this NFL game or this college game, and they're both good games, what are you going to watch? I usually lean towards college. But the Bucs not playing in week one and watching the slate of the NFL starting with Thursday's game with Kansas City and New England all the way through Monday Night Football and the two games there, I found myself desperately missing Tampa Bay Buccaneers football. I found myself yearning for Tampa Bay Buccaneers football. I can't say that that's been the case since John Gruden left. I haven't had a sense that I had to be invested emotionally, intellectually in the Tampa Bay Buccaneers in any way, shape, or form for a very long time. And I have because they're my it's my town, it's my team. But there was some foregone conclusions. There were some things you could say about the Bucs that prohibited any real enthusiasm regarding the playoffs or an extended run of any kind, maybe even a winning record. And now that we're in a different place as an organization, now that the Bucs are at a different place, and I almost called you on Sunday, Tom. I know you got out of town. I got out of town because of the hurricane. Just to talk NFL football and how it related to the Bucs.
Yeah, how do we fit in the puzzle?
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Before the puzzle was itself, and then we were kind of just a piece here on the periphery. But now the Bucs could be a big piece.
They could be a really good team.
To the playoff picture, to the balance of power in the NFC over the next couple of seasons, that's not laughable anymore. And sure, like you, I think it all went downhill when Raheem was elevated to head coach. When he went coordinator to head coach, boom, overnight. And then they brought in Jim Bates for those three or four games, and he was running man-contained principles while you had a cover two head coach.
That's correct.
This is the dumbest thing I've ever heard. It's never going to work. And then they cut Cato June, and, you know, they just had all these personnel problems. In the years after that, the most excited I would be, not even that 10-6 season was completely a mirage, and we all know that because, you know, Freeman would throw up one or two passes a game the last 6-8 games of the season, and they'd be 50-50 balls.
No, fool's gold, fool's gold.
30-70 balls, and somehow we come up with them. These fourth down plays is magic. We're we'd be invested in, hey, we're not going 0-16. We got to win today. This is our winnable game this month. We have one winnable game a month. We need this one.
Highlight of those dark, dark days.
Yeah, it was Packers.
I predicted the win over the Packers.
Yeah,
that was inexplicable.
Aaron Rodgers and the Packers, and we wore the throwbacks that day.
And I said it on the air, and I'm glad that'll be forever my best prediction. I don't know why. It was like 2 weeks out, I said the Bucs will beat the Packers.
Sure.
You get a sense. Sometimes it's personnel grouping. Sometimes it's style.
You called Dolphins over Ravens, too, the same day that Michael Spurlock returned the kick for a touchdown that broke the streak for Tampa. That was against San Francisco. You called Baltimore Miami.
I did, and I'm not doing this to be a jerk and praise. I get a lot wrong, folks. I do. But let me just say this. If you're a winless team and you're looking for a win, anywhere in the country, you could be a Cleveland team that's 0 in the world. You could be Detroit 0 in the world, whatever you are. Somewhere along the way, I don't know why, there is a clairvoyance that comes over me. I will look at your schedule after like 6 or 7 games and go, all right, they're going to win one game. It's probably going to be this one, and I'll circle it. And I don't know why, but you're right. I've done it twice for teams that needed to win a game. And the Bucs, and I did it too with the Dolphins in Baltimore. That was crazy.
No, and that's where we were. And I am enthused. And I was in the preseason too. This is how I knew, you know, before even Scuttle Bucs was definitely going to be a thing for this fall. That's how I knew that what the Bucs are doing is really affecting me as a fan positively for once. I mean, the last couple of years I've been watching all the press conferences and stuff to see how Jameis integrates because I think he's going to be the franchise quarterback. We flash forward a couple of years. It looks like he very much is definitely going to be the franchise quarterback. But I'm watching preseason games and seeing how, you know, the pieces fit in Carolina. I'm looking to see what New Orleans defense looks like. I'm looking at the balance of power in the NFC South specifically. And where do we fit in that puzzle? What kind of storylines do these other three teams have going on? That's a junkie's problem. But I guess that's the problem we have now with Tampa Bay.
When they give you reason to believe, and the reason you're focused on the Bucs has nothing to do with the fact that they have the best cheerleading outfits in all the land.
Yeah,
typically,
Chris Conte apparently believes that.
Oh, well, Chris, well done, sir. I don't know you from Adam other than your playing skills, and I don't know your beautiful wife. But if she's a Bucs cheerleader, I know that you did quite well for yourself.
Probably better than you do in coverage.
Let me just tell you something really quickly. That's not a biased thing, and I'm being a total pig-headed chauvinist guy here. The Bucs cheerleaders are insane. It's impossible. Like, if you go to a Bucs game with your wife, that's a toughie.
Well, unless she knows the drill.
She knows the drill. She's got to know the drill.
I mean, the ladies go to the games to look at the dudes in the football pants anyway. So, you know what I mean? Seriously.
There's some hardcore woman who can break down every play going, damn you, Tom Lang.
Come on.
Oh, I know.
There's truth to it.
I know. No. That's right. That's right. I just, if you had forgotten, the Bucs cheerleaders are.
My girl loves baseball pants. God bless baseball pants every time I go to a game. So to me, you know, when that happens, we go to the ballpark, I say, well, now I have license. I have license. We're sitting on the sidelines in Tampa Bay, or we go out to Dallas to watch a game. Hey, man, all good.
Well, the good news is this. We're hooked up with good women. My wife and the mother of my two children likes to predict which of the women on a cheerleading squad, if we go to a Bucks game,
oh, God.
That I'm interested most enthused in. By. So she'll say, well, hold on, let me scour here, and I'll pick the one that you're going to say is the Mac Daddy. Mm-hmm. And she's come close a couple times. She found the one that was second two times.
She missed. Wow, you have a medal stand? Gold, well, bronze, and silver?
I tell her that was close. I was looking at that one for a good long time. We got to get out of here. What do we do? Let's do W's and L's.
Now we're next.
Let's do it next. Let's do W's and L's. First four games for the Bucks on the Scuttlebucks next.
Avast ye Scuttlebucks.
You're listening to the Scuttlebucks, and I appreciate that you are. I'm Jeff. That's Tom over there. We're talking Buccaneers football. Hey, don't forget, you can use your Joe Bucks Fan discount code at fanretreat.com. When you go to fanretreat.com, type in Joe Bucks Fan and get the discount. By the way, it's a local company with less overhead, so they pass that savings on to you, which is always a good thing. Lowest ticket prices. Check fanretreat.com compared to SeatGeek, for example, or StubHub. You'll find 95% of fanretreat.com tickets are cheaper. That's a good thing. All right, so we do this W's and L's thing on my show. It's a lot of fun, or we think it is. I don't know. Maybe we're only amusing ourselves. But here is the it's almost an impossibility to do this with the NFL because bizarre stuff happens all the time, and you admit that it's hard to make a living betting on the NFL like you can, say, in college. We'll have a little fun with it. I don't want to do the whole season, Tom. They're playing 16 straight games. So what we'll do instead is look at these first four games. That's Chicago, Minnesota, the Giants, and New England. And we'll apply a little W's and L's magic to it.
W's.
Wins.
All right. How you doing?
Losses.
Damn it. We lost. We f***ing super lost, man.
Where do we triumph? Where doth thou fall? W's and L's, fire it up. Let's start with this weekend. Chicago, coming off a loss at home, played valiantly, had a chance inside the 10, waning seconds of the game. No, sir, doesn't happen. 0-1, the start of a very long season, becomes 0-2 as they go to Raymond James. The Bucks chomping at the bit. The fans ready to come out of the stands. The Bucks look a little rusty early, gather themselves, speed of the game adjustments, all that good stuff. Too many weapons, too much talent. Bucks win easily, 1-0.
Yeah, I tend to agree. I got some worries about what they're going to be able to do running the football because I think that's where the rust will show the most. I'd like to say they come out and drop a 30 bomb on that ass, as we like to say. It's going to be a 23 or 26 point output, but a victory nonetheless, and we'll get the hell out of Dodge. 1-0.
1-0 for the Bucks. Good way to start the season. By the way, your concerns, I think, are valid, not just because the rust will infect the running back position, but the lack of talent will also affect the running back position. Tampa Bay goes on the road the following week against Minnesota that's not lacking at the running back position. Dalvin Cook was available for Tampa Bay. I understand why and how it is they chose not to take him. I worry that after this game, we'll be thinking they should have taken him, if you're not already thinking it. Minnesota gets the win at home. They've got weapons. Sam Bradford may be able to play a little bit, somewhere beyond 6 and 7 yards per pass. What? Bucks fall on the road narrowly, 28-21. Laos.
I've been long a proponent of getting Dalvin Cook, acquiring his services in the draft. However, the way it worked out, O.J. Howard is going to prove to be the long-term solution and the right pick. The Bucks go to 2-0 after going and getting a win on the man, that New Orleans secondary is trash. They stacked to stop the run, begged Sam Bradford hit some passes down the field. He proved he could. the Bucks won't make the same mistake by just stacking the box blindly.
2-0, Tampa Bay, according to Tom Lang. I've got us at 1-1. The Giants roll into Raymond James Stadium. It ain't happening, Eli. Bucks big, 30-10.
You know, this is dangerous territory here because, dare I say, a three-game winning streak to start the season. I believe I dare say it. It looks like they've got a mess on their hands in New York.
All right.
There are some inconsistencies with that Giant organization for the last 10 years, but somehow in the last dozen years they have two Super Bowls. Go figure. But the Bucks playing at home, winning another game, going to 3-0 to start the season.
4:05 kickoff, a little later in the day, perhaps a little bit better weather. Then the big one, October the 5th, 8:25 p.m. CBS. Raymond James Stadium will be packed. Hoping against hope, or is this the year that the New England Patriots take a big step backward and will feel so much better about this game 2-3 weeks from now than we do currently? New England obviously looks shaky. They got time to fix it before they roll into Raymond James. They will do that. They will get the win over the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Heartbreaking defeat, 27-24. New England takes out the Bucs. 2-2 through the first four for yours truly.
Yeah, you know, I can't do it here. I can't. I foresee a shootout, a really entertaining shootout, because if New England can't get to the passer with the weapons that Tampa Bay has, could you say they're more loaded than the Patriots from a weapon standpoint? I think you could. However, Bill Belichick will make game plans happen on a moment's notice and cover up any weakness. They'll probably sign somebody off the street that picks up 8 or 9 sacks this year. The Patriots will have it together by week 4. They win the game 35-31.
Also, I would suggest Hall of Fame tight end, Hall of Fame head coach, Hall of Fame quarterback, and a better backfield than Tampa Bay. Maybe we don't have the more talented team.
Doug Martin will be back by week 4 now, and he'll be fresh. It's a short week, but Doug Martin will be ready to pound that rock.
Well, he ought to be. Sitting around doing nothing. I hope he's ready and...
hopefully doing nothing. Whatever he was doing to get himself suspended, don't do that.
Or do it, just don't get caught. Little W's and L's. First four games. I said 2-2.
3-1.
You said 3-1?
Yes, sir.
I like your prediction better than mine. I hope you're right and I hope I'm wrong. I hope we're both wrong. I hope they're 4-0. You know what's beautiful about that edition of W's and L's? Is that neither of us think the Bucks are going to go 0-4. And there was a time not too long ago where 0-4 seemed very likely.
You might say the Scuttlebucks may never have started if we thought they were going to start 0-4 this season.
No sense tuning in every week to hear two guys bitching about how bad the franchise is. Well, although, if things go south, you might.
One thing, you know, to note about the preseason, too, and Lee hit on this last segment, and, you know, what Dirk Koetter thinks of the preseason, I think it also is an indicator of what Dirk Koetter thinks of this offense.
Right. He's seen enough.
He saw enough in practice.
But by the way, he saw enough in the games. They look good in the games. Lee, I'm going to respectfully disagree with you. I thought the Bucs looked very good in the preseason, especially on offense. They just didn't cash in inside the red zone. Those aren't always those aren't the things that necessarily portend of problems in the regular season. First of all, you know, they'll scheme plays down there a little bit differently. So we'll see. You learn from that, you move on. I'm not prepared to chalk up red zone issues as a thing that's going to plague this team. Now, let's do merriment and misery, because this fits into that perfectly before we end this edition of the Scuttlebox.
And now, merriment and misery.
That's it, huh? That's all we got. There's no other sounder there.
Well, no, I could continue. I could have just played the sound at full blast. No, people love this freaking tune.
Well, I like this tune. It's one of my favorites. I sing it just in my private life. So, here's what I'll tell you.
That's true, he does.
I do. All right, so let me say this. The merriment will come from Tampa Bay's offense this year. It's going to be an offense that's ranked in the upper half without question. Jameis is going to have another fantastic season, probably throw for over 4,000 yards again. And I would like to say cut down on interceptions, but I still feel like he'll throw 15 to 18 interceptions. But he's got more weapons, obviously, and the Bucs should be able to light up the scoreboard with more regularity than they did over the last few years, because teams can't just double Mike Evans and then really force Jameis to to throw to guys that should be other people's threes and fours as opposed to twos and threes. And so I do think the Bucks are going to be much better there. That's where the merriment will come from. The misery will come from either the inability to get to opposing quarterbacks late in games when you got to get a stop, too much time in a quarterback division where a lot of guys emerge and obviously make plays consistently. Tampa could be hurt by that. And then I would say, until we see otherwise, again, I'm not prepared to designate this as a problem that is likely to happen, but I do have some concerns in the kicking game. That would affect the red zone and the ability to execute, get points there. So red zone concerns could lead to misery as well.
Yeah, to me, red zone concerns are number one in the misery category, and I agree with you. Like, for example, the play before James makes the boneheaded play in Jacksonville, there's a throw to O.J. Howard.
He's got
to
catch it.
Well, I think he's also testing O.J. Howard in that situation. He's got to know what he's got, you know, in a game situation and all of his weapons, and there's plenty more to test this
year.
Sure. You know, I don't know that they call a play like that. I don't know that he makes a throw like that to test a new player.
It was a good throw.
It was a good throw.
He needs to make the catch.
Well, again, I think he's going to go to his bread and butter. Also, if you look at week one when they're up in Cincinnati, he's throwing the ball to Mike Evans over and over. They're working on something there. That's not what they're going to call in the flow of a regular season.
Right, right. You scheme things up differently when it's real, yeah.
Also, misery. Here's a potential for misery. I might be looking around the corner for something. But if DeSean Jackson doesn't get enough touches, I think you've got a problem on your hands in the offense.
It was always the case, though. Always the case that you were welcoming in a guy who was going to be boom or bust, I think.
And the number one thing I think that you can take from Hard Knocks about the offense is the relationship between DeSean Jackson and Jameis. You've seen two bits of evidence I think are very, very reassuring that that's not going to happen. Number one, they're in the hotel room together in Jacksonville, sure, going over plays and doing a walkthrough drill by themselves, going through terminology checks, side adjusts, all those things. They're on the same page. That's great. That's more than I ever expected. I thought DeSean Jackson would be a guy who punches in his time card, runs really fast, makes a few plays downfield for you, and that's about it. No, but the details of the game, that's great. Number two, Jameis talked to me and said, all right, so I realize I got to get you the ball early. In college, Jameis Winston had a target named Kelvin Benjamin, who now plays for the Carolina Panthers, very much the same. You had to get that player involved early. If you did, he would stay checked in for the entirety of the 60 minutes.
That is correct.
I think Jameis has found that out. Merriment, I think, is going to be balance on offense this year. When you get Doug Martin back, I fully believe this is a healthy Doug Martin who will rush for over 1,000 yards this year in the 13 games that he plays, and I believe it because of two reasons. One, you have all the weapons in the passing game, so no longer can defenses, like a couple of years ago when you rushed for 1,400 yards, stack the box. They can't do it. So Jameis is also smart enough, and this is reason number two, to check you into the right plays. You know, Jameis here in Tallahassee, his run checks were among the best things he did in the entirety.
His run checks right off the bat 2 years ago,
right,
in the National Football League.
The league adjusted, though. They said, all right, fine, kid, beat us over the top. We think you're going to make mistakes, and he did. Well, now they can't. Defenses have to play you truly honest. So I think when you get Doug Martin back in the fold, you're not going to see stacked fronts. You're going to see a lot of running lanes for Doug Martin to take advantage of, and I think you're going to achieve balance on offense, which makes you nearly unstoppable. It's a really exciting year for the offense if they all stay healthy.
If you're a fantasy football player, here's the number one reason why you should be excited by having Jameis Winston in the first few games, because he doesn't have Doug Martin. They're going to throw the hell out of the football. And from there, you may want to go to a different quarterback. I don't know. No, but I'm going to tell you early on, they're going to throw it early and often.
I think a cool number to look at this year, too, and it is kind of a fantasy number, but it's also just a reality number. Okay, Mike Evans' raw numbers, we're going to look at his receptions and yardage totals and touchdowns. We're always going to look at that. But the targets for the last couple of years, obviously, have been through the roof. He's the only target on the
guy,
perimeter.
Yeah.
I think you could see his targets drop by about 20-25%.
They better?
But his production not drop off by all that much because he's going to be open more often.
He's got opportunities in single coverage.
By default.
Good work out of you, Tom. Thanks for listening, everybody. We enjoy doing the Scuttlebucks. Next week when we talk to you, we'll be analyzing, assessing, and looking forward to the next game. We'll talk about the last one and all the stuff in between. How about them apples? Real football. Enjoy it, everybody, and stay safe down there.